Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane under all these circumstances. Hope you've been able to watch some good movies to pass the time away. And I was able to do that myself. Before we get to the grab a pencil portion of the show, I'm going to play an interview I did earlier with Abdul-Kim Shabazz. Yes, we are separated, but the banter still happens, this time over the phone. But we'll get to my talk with Abdul in a little bit. But I want to open with a new film. And I'm probably going to do this for next week's show, but I was going to ask folks, what was the last film you saw in the theater? And I think the last one I saw was Bad Boys for Life, which is now out on home video. But I know there are new films that you're able to stream and view online, so you know that option is out there. But I got to watch The True History of the Kelly Gang, about Ned Kelly, the famous Australian outlaw, and I remember seeing the original film Ned Kelly with Mick Jagger, but it's been a long time, and his acting chops in say 1969 were limited. Mick Jagger's gotten a little better cinematically. And I know that there was a remake with Orlando Bloom, which I never did get to see. But anyway, it's the story of Ned Kelly. And we have two parts, basically one chapter that says boy and the other that says man. And then we get to a third chapter, which I don't want to give away. But we have him, we see him being raised. Mostly his father's out of the picture. The mother is the one that kind of runs the house, played by Essie Davis, if you remember the mom from The Babadook. And the boy, the young Ned Kelly, played by Orlando Schwert, really good performances across the board. But we see how they're living on hard times. The dad is useless. She entertains soldiers of various kinds to make ends meet. The mother winds up selling young Ned to a rogue character with a nice performance from Russell Crowe, fat bearded Russell Crowe, who also gets to play guitar and sing bawdy songs in this particular picture, and goes on the road with the Crowe takes a young boy under his wing and goes on the road. The son not knowing that he has been sold by his mother, but winds up getting the bug as far as a life of crime. Then we get into the second half of him developing his as an adult, well, 20-something after some time in jail, but organizing his gang and becoming the legend that he is in Australia. Played in this film by George MacKay, for you fans of 1917, among others. And right out of the gate with this film, you get the title is The True Story of the Kelly Gang. And at the very beginning, you hear, none of what you see will be true. And there's also a voiceover narration of, may I burn in hell if I speak false. So there's a little bit of what is real, what isn't. I think of the line in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance of Print the Legend. But it's more than just a crime film. There's a family dynamic to it. His gang, especially with his close friend that he grew up with, there's a special friendship, a strong friendship there that in case is more sustainable than his actual family. So there's it's more of a family drama than a crime drama, although there's enough crime in this story. So and for the most part, it works. There's one moment in the second chapter where we get some camera trickery and rock music, and he is introduced almost like a fighter going into the ring, which is a little heavy-handed. But if that's the biggest complaint I have, that's all right. And then there's a big shootout between British soldiers and the Kelly gang, and of course it just doesn't go according to plan. Oh, I should also mention Nicholas Hoult has a role in this film as a British soldier who friends Ned, and then it goes down a much different path. So anyway, it's a good family crime drama, and it's available. I believe it's available streaming. So go look for it. And before we get to Abdul Kim Shabazz, we have Dead People We Like, because I never have time for Dead People We Don't Like. But actress Shirley Knight passed away earlier this week. Was one of those that was able to bounce from TV, stage, to screen, to television. She won a Tony Award in 1976 for her performance in Kennedy's Children. And early in her film career, two Best Supporting Actress nominations. One in 1960 for The Dark at the Top of the Stairs. And then 2 years later for her performance as Heavenly Finley in the film version of Tennessee Williams' Sweet Bird of Youth. Other credits include Five Gates to Hell, The Couch, House of Women, the Sidney Lumet film The Group, Dutchman, The Counterfeit Killer, the Richard Lester cult film Petula, one of Coppola's early films. She's the star in The Rain People with then-unknowns Robert Duvall and James Caan. She was in the 1971 film Secrets, starring Jacqueline Bisset. And yes, I had a Jacqueline Bisset via Secrets poster in my room as a young boy. It explains a little. The underrated disaster film Juggernaut, Beyond the Poseidon Adventure, Endless Love, Color of Night, plays the mom in Stuart Saves His Family, was in the remake of Diabolique, played Beverly in As Good As It Gets, and for you pop culture reference, modern pop culture fans, she was also the mother in the Paul Blart Mall Cop films, but constantly working, so salute to Shirley Knight. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. And we're going to get to my chat with Abdul Kim Shabazz in just a second. But first, you know you got to hear it.
The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never! Never!
I do hateful things for which people love me, and I do lovable things for which they hate me. I'm admired for my detestability.
It is a newspaper's duty to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
I don't like that fellow.
You know it's bad when Abdul and I can't be in the same studio together. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well. How's everything going?
Well, we're doing okay. We're doing okay. I thought of you because I assume your mask is Gucci, like Cleavon Little in Blazing Saddles.
Actually, it is got the Superman logo on the front.
Of course you do. And I have one that says Otis Berg.
There you go. Hey, if one must conduct oneself in a global pandemic, the least one can do is make a fashion statement.
Exactly. First off, I wanted to go back to last week, speaking, because I mean you're still working, I'm still working. You had to go by the governor's house last week, correct?
That is correct. There were about 200-300 protesters last Saturday in front of the governor's residence, and for anyone who isn't quite familiar where that is in Indianapolis. It is at 46 and Meridian, in the Meridian Kessler neighborhood, one of the oldest neighborhoods here in the city. And so they were protesting on the Meridian side of the street, because that's the sort of the main thoroughfare that runs through the through the center of town. And as they showed up, two things I noticed. Number one, there was no social distancing whatsoever. So. Instead of being, the recommended 6 feet apart, people were more like 2 feet apart. And there weren't a whole lot of folks wearing any masks or anything. There are a lot of older people who kind of fit the, you know, the COVID-19, you know, demographic. People even brought their, you know, some of their small children there. And as you all know, kids can be, you know, carriers and be asymptomatic. And so I just basically called it a COVID-19 smorgasbord.
The governor was not at home, correct?
No, the folks were protesting the governor's, you know, stay-at-home orders, stay-at-place. They were saying these are, you know, unconstitutional and they're hurting businesses. You know, let's open businesses back up. All workers are essential. No blood for oil. You know, my body, my choice. Honk if you love Jesus. I mean, just pick the
taking away our freedoms.
Yeah, pick the protest sign of your choice, but. It was ironic because the governor was actually down at the state house with his team working on plans to actually, guess what? Wait for it. Reopen the state.
It's all in the timing, I guess.
Yeah. And what was really and a couple things, my friend, that were just really disturbing about the whole thing is, number one, they could have done the protest at the state capitol where there's plenty of room. Anyone's ever been on the Capitol grounds?
Yep.
And the crowds would have been looked a whole lot larger, too. But as one person said, this is the guy who was the organizer. I think his name was Andy Lyons, if I'm getting that right. Basically told my colleagues over at the IBJ, you know, I'm exercising my First Amendment rights. You know, I'm accepting the consequence of my actions. If I die, I just die. I'm going to die defending freedom. And anyone else who comes out here, they made a choice, too. Like, well, we know who did make a choice? The people you're going to be around.
Yep.
Because, once again, you can be asymptomatic for 2 weeks and be a carrier, which is what makes COVID-19 so much more annoying and dangerous, you know, than other, you know, flu-like symptoms.
So I guess you're saying that they did a pre-preparation party less than the People's Front of Judea.
Yes. And as I kind of starkly wrote on one of my columns this past week, is the nice thing about these folks, or say the nice thing about all this, is because we've been doing our social distancing, do what we're supposed to do, there'll be more hospital beds and coffins for these people in about a month.
Ouch. So other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
The play was great. I don't know why they sat us in the John Wilkes booth, but it's not the one.
Oh, there you go. See, even over the phone, folks, it's all we need now is Paul Poteet, and it's 15 years ago.
Exactly.
So you've been able to work, correct? And I'm assuming you're doing some at home, or are you able to actually go in the building?
I go in the building.
Okay.
So, yeah, because, you know, we're MS Communications downtown, also my law office downtown. And so I found it easier to, you know, get up in the morning, you know, keep my routine, go to work, and then come back about 5 or 6, and that way I can probably stay married.
Right. And no matter what, no matter what's happening, Nigel and Hammer still aren't wearing pants.
No, they are not. Someday.
All right. So how have things been in the Shabazz household?
Well, a couple of things. As you all know, the lovely Mrs. Shabazz is a massage therapist and also a physical therapist, physical therapist assistant. So a lot of her work requires, you know, up close, you know, personal contact. And so what has happened is, you know, she's home all day because everything is basically, you know, closed down until, you know, we get to that, you know, phase of reopening the state of Indiana. So for a while, she was on this major Netflix thing, like serious Netflix.
Oh, wait, before you get into this, let me put on my corduroy jacket with the elbow pads. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, he's back. Dr. Soci, film therapist. I know exactly where this is going. So, Abdul, yeah. What happened with your lovely wife and Netflix?
And everything that she watched was people in some woods. It was always cloudy. It was never a sunny day.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly. It was dark. It was in the woods. There were always like three or four people. There was usually, in a couple movies, there was a kid with some emotional issues. And then there's like either a doll or a mirror or a thing, and eventually everybody dies except for the one person. And there's a, you know, the mirror and the hands clapping. There's a Sam Raimi thing crawling on the ceiling, you know, and kind of looking back at you. And I'm like, okay.
And what's the racist conspiracy behind these films?
Well, in a lot of the films, there were no black people at all. So they just cut to the chase. You know, why bother, you know, killing him when we could just not include him in the movie? But then again, there was also Use of the Woods, and it was cold outside. So two places you will not find African-American. You
know. For those who don't know, Abdul has a thing. We've done this a few times over the years, but you name the horror film, and he will come up with a racist conspiracy behind it. For instance, Dracula.
Well, which one?
All right. So she's watching the lovely Mrs. Shabazz. Apparently her Shakespearean flaw, folks, is her love of horror films, not Mr. Shabazz's favorite genre.
And see, but I can do the horror film if it's done right. You know, something like John Carpenter's, like what John Carpenter does, are usually pretty good, pretty decent. Early John Carpenter, and like later John Carpenter, because they just got ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
But when they would just become so formulaic that I could just immediately walk in, look at them, tell you exactly what's going to happen. Now, granted, Friday the 13th was not a complicated plot. I will grant that.
Yes.
You know? In a Friday the 13th film, they spelled escapism EXIT. I understand that. But at least you watch Friday the 13th for either the hot girl or to do the body count.
Yes. And
which, by the way, I think it was Friday the 13th part 4. I think it was when there was one actress that I remember when I was in high school, and some very, very fond adolescent memories came back. Let's put it that way.
So has she watched these with you?
Oh, no. My wife is not a big Friday. She'll occasionally watch a Friday the 13th film, but we'll just kind of laugh and chuckle. Okay, teenagers about to have sex. Okay, they're about to die. Oh, there we go.
Atoning for their sins.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you mentioned, I think, off the air, and I will segue into this. Yes, you like the classy horror films, like J.D.'s Revenge.
Yes. I did a little mini African-American film festival streak.
See, it would have been perfect if I was hosting it, like Robert Osborne.
Oh, yeah, it would have been great. Now we're going to talk about Rita Ray Moore and Petey Wheatstraw.
Which I own. I think all of the ones that you watch, I own. So anyway, start with Petey Wheatstraw, the devil's son-in-law.
Well, here's a weird thing. We're little kids, just like Detroit, Chicago, you know, lots of drive-ins, you know, late 70s and early 80s. And one time my brother, my older cousin, my dad let him borrow the car and take us to the drive-in. Well, this is the one time I did not go. I just didn't want to be bothered with another bad film because, yes, I was even snobbish at 10 years old.
Yep.
One of the movies I saw was Petey Wheatstraw.
Oh, man.
Because there was a song that all my little brothers came home singing like the next day. I'm like, what in the world? And so I never gave it much thought until, okay, here I am, you know, with the Netflix and Amazon Prime. Just kind of, you know how you start going down that rabbit hole?
Oh, yeah.
And there was Rudy Ray Moore and Petey Wheatstraw. I'm like, well, you know what? It's only going to cost me 99 cents. Which,
did you get your money's worth?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and let's just watch it. And I did. And
yeah, right there.
What struck me the most was, you know what? Those two guys that run the other club, I think I've seen them before. Yes, they were on Sanford and Son.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
And the other problem I did have, though, and I take black exploitation films with a big grain of salt, as you know, because you got to remember the context, you know.
Yep.
When they were made, what was going on, the fact, you know, a lot of these people were actually very accomplished actors, but they just couldn't find the work,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do whatever. But there is one part in Petey Wheatstraw where it's a whole lot of, let's put it this way, almost kind of stereotypical big eyes and mouth open and hands up and feet don't fail me now.
Is there a hole with the body as if they ran through the wall?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, there were a couple scenes of that which, like, okay, all right, that's a bit much.
Yeah, I own several of Mr. Moore's films, but his Rudy Ray Moore films do make, like, Fred Williamson movies look like Michael Bay pictures.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, watching a Rudy Ray Moore film, it makes Keenan Ivory Wayne, you know, look like Kenneth Branagh in Hamlet.
Wow. So the lovely Mrs. Shabazz watched this as well?
No, she was watching her Sam Raimi-like horror films in the living room while I'm streaming Netflix on my desktop in my spare room.
Okay, so did you start with Petey Wheatstraw?
Actually, I started with Truck Turner.
Oh, yes. Yep, own that, own the soundtrack.
Yeah, good old Mr. Isaac Hayes and Nichelle Nichols.
Yeah. Yeah, so Truck Turner, he's a bounty hunter and with a great car, and he's got an ex that he has to deal with. And yeah, if you're a fan of Star Trek, you have to see Ms. Nichols as a madam, she wants her workers in line. In fact, if you go on YouTube, you can find a clip of her dialogue from the film incorporated with her image from the Star Trek cartoon. Yes, which we can't say year. But that was fun. Do you like that one?
Well, let's put it this way. When she says, "I want your legs to be like a hailing frequency, open." Like, okay. I mean, and I've seen Truck Turner before, so it was just more for just sort of that campy, romanticized, view of the universe.
Yes.
But then I went and decided, okay, all right, I've seen a movie. I watched a movie that I've seen before. Now let's go watch something we have not seen before. And that was the ghost of, J.D. Salinger or whatever.
J.D.'s Revenge.
Yeah, J.D.'s Revenge. Now, the plot, ladies and gentlemen, once again, use that four-letter word usely, was a guy goes to a hypnotist. Glenn Thurman is actually a really accomplished actor. He was in A Different World.
Cooley High.
Also Cooley High. He goes to a hypnotist. So they go to a nightclub, and he gets called up on stage by a hypnotist, and he's put under a spell. And while he's asleep, that's when the ghost of J.D., whatever the hell his name is.
Yes, he's possessed by the soul of a notorious gangster in New Orleans.
Yes, who was a hustler back during World War II, and he ends up going. And also, Lou Gossett Jr. Is in the film as a preacher who actually was around at the time, who actually was responsible for killing, J.D. And then J.D.'s ghost comes back and. It's just kind of like, okay, all right, yeah, sure. But I did watch it all the way through.
By the mid 70s, you had, of course, the black horror films. We talked before about Blackula and Blackenstein and Abby, but this was actually, I think J.D.'s Revenge is one of the better ones because you have Glenn Turman and you have Lou Gossett, and he's a law student, I think, at Tulane. So
he's working on his working on his law degree, and the one thing I thought was interesting about the whole film is one of the young ladies that he was dating was actually the daughter of the woman that was murdered, that he was accused of murdering, and all that other fun stuff.
It's all in the timing there, but no, that's actually of the horror films of that subgenre. That's actually J.D.'s Revenge is one of the better ones.
Wow, that's like. In salutatorian in summer.
All right, what came next?
Let's see. There was, like I said, we did Truck Turner. We did Petey Wheatstraw. We did, J.D. Then I was getting ready to watch a fourth film, but then that's when all the COVID-19, I had to go back to doing my job.
Ah, okay. All right. So it sounds like you. And she hasn't watched, your wife didn't watch any of those?
No, like I said, she was in the living room
Okay. Taking
a very valuable bandwidth on, just like some of these really bad, gratuitous horror films. And I kicked myself in the butt because I meant to bring you her bucket list
of
films that she was going to continue to watch.
Uh-huh. When you find it, I'll bring you back on. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, for some strange reason, I just felt my hand burn. I felt less intelligent.
Oh, I bet you. Text from Mrs. Shavaz in 3, 2.
Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like in our household, we do a lot of solo time. Lynn and Emma are on what I call laptop academia, and then I'm doing work in my home office, and then we get together as a trio and cook dinner and watch television. So is that the same in your house?
Ours is a little different. My wife usually has been on this cleaning spree lately.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, all right, well, why are you touching that? And so everything is clean, but I have no idea where anything is. So.
Yeah.
But we did throw away a whole bunch of clothes. When I found you'll love this, old friend.
Yep.
When I found my Bugs Bunny tie I bought from the Warner Brothers store at the Galleria in St. Louis, it's like, all righty, yeah, this has probably been here for a while. So let's get that out of here.
What did you pull from the pile that she wants thrown out?
Actually, just a bunch of stuff I didn't wear anymore.
Okay, all right.
And a bunch of stuff from them. But let's put it this way. It was a very late 90s wardrobe that was still sitting around there.
So you're not waiting for it to come back?
Well, I'd have to drop about 25 pounds.
Yes. Yeah, I have the advantage of passing the clothes along to Emma, whether she wants to wear them or, in the case of denim, you know, just cutting them up and using them for projects.
Yeah, of course, I did think about actually making a couple COVID-19 masks out of it. So
There you go.
Whew. It's been interesting because, you know my wife's television happening. She watches a lot of the court TV stuff, here's how my son murdered his mother type television show. A lot of that forensic stuff.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
I just come home and say, wow, I wish I could one day find the stove as warm as the television. Okay,
you don't say that.
No. Yeah, plus it's an energy efficient TV, so they really don't get warm anymore.
Exactly. back when it was more wood than television.
Yeah, you can set a plate on top of the
right.
The TV and cook the darn thing.
That's when they when the parents know if you're screwing around because they feel the television. You always took about eight hours to warm up.
And don't forget your remote control, which only had four buttons on it.
I thought that was the sibling.
Well, no, we actually had a remote control. Matter of fact, I thought of you the other day when I was watching an old episode of Sanford and Son, and he's trying to convince Lamont to buy him a new television.
Oh boy!
And I think Slappy White was his friend who was the guest star.
Yep.
And so Fred's talking to Lamont. He's got Slappy White is on the other end of Lamont. So, folks, just to give you a visual, and Slappy White's giving him, just kind of the hand signal. So he's like, you know what I want, Lamont? And he makes Slappy makes a square. So I can want a TV, a big screen TV, and he makes a little gesture with his thumb with a remote control, and then he points to his face and color.
Jeez. Yeah, that one they still play. You can air that line.
Yes, you can. There are a couple, a couple of episodes of San Francisco. They actually left the word in there.
The Tarzan movie line from the court scene?
Yes.
Welcome to skirting around words here at Film Sociology.
Yeah, TV One has no problem airing it. So let's put it that way.
Okay, fair enough.
TV Land, not so much.
Yeah,
TV One, sure.
Nice. So what are what's happening? What else is happening over at Indie Politics?
Well, we just did some polling of the governor's race for president, and a lot of Hoosier attitudes about where we are right now. With COVID-19, and one of the questions we asked was, do you support, how do you think the governor's doing? Do you approve or disapprove? And the governor, Eric Holcomb, was like at 65%. So, doing okay. But when we asked, do you support the stay-at-home policy? Because I figured, that one's probably going to be 50-50. That had like 81% approval rating.
Wow.
So I was like, whoa.
So it's just a very loud 19%.
Yes, exactly. And not even 19. It was more like, 15, and the rest of four were like either didn't know or undecided. So those probably people had no idea if they were inside or outside to begin with. But that I thought was actually really interesting. And it shows that, despite, once again, social media is not real life.
That is, no matter how much we play it.
Yeah, no matter how much we like for it to be, Twitter does not vote. Just calm down. Yeah, and like I said, we look at COVID-19 from a number of different perspectives. The media's coverage of COVID-19, what has it done for colleges, universities, folks that may have mental health or addiction issues. We're doing an interview next week, so we've been trying not to be the chatter class.
Right.
And no, by the way, folks, I will not be recommending using Lysol or pine soil or any other kind of soil, when the thing on the bottle says for external use only.
Wait, somebody's been using it like Windex in my big fat Greek wedding?
Well, no. The president the other day, and you know where this is going.
Okay.
Yeah. They were, and what the president was doing, he was kind of thinking out loud, which he because when you think out loud, you get that stream of consciousness, and you're the president of the United States, so people take you a bit more seriously, you know, than that guy just sitting over at the end of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so while one of the health experts was talking about, you know, things that can kill COVID-19, you know, like pine sol, like, you know, cleaning surfaces and sunlight, oh, the president kind of says, I wonder if you could, like, you know, maybe inject something, like some kind of injection to the bloodstream that could kill COVID-19.
Was there facepalm behind him?
No, but you could tell, I guess, from the looks on some of the staff's face over the corner. It was the Homer Simpson step back in the grass meme.
Right. makes the mayor of New even made the mayor of Las Vegas go, come on, really?
Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, you got to love that. Hey, we're willing to be a control focus group.
Ooh.
You know, thank you for volunteering my people, but no, we'll take a pass, you know.
Oh, boy. Sometimes art imitates. So that means the purge is happening by the end of the year.
We should only be so lucky. Matter of fact, I posted a clip from The Onion. Today on social media. This one will come about a month ago. It says, you know, man stockpiling cleaning solutions for waiting for presidents to order to ingest to kill COVID-19.
And, of course, let's never forget, folks, there's a website devoted to people that think The Onion is real.
Yeah, like, no, it is not. It's not real.
Satire, so, folks.
But one thing I am exploring, I want to get your thoughts, is sort of the whole movie at home thing.
Yes.
That people are starting to do that. You know, you can't go out to the big screen. You know, so you can literally, like, you know, rent the movie for, you know, it'll cost you $20, but you basically rent it for like 48 hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened. I mean, there's been a number of films that either were released or were on the verge of being released, and now that you can stream those. That's one way of doing it. The other one that's been brought up, and I'm intrigued, once we get past some of this, is that, you know, there's been reports that there's going to be a boom in the drive-in movies.
Yeah. Yeah, because drive-ins, you can go watch the movie and do quite well. Now, granted, it's Indiana, so you can't go till 9 o'clock at night.
But... yes. And they're not showing Petey Wheatstraw, unfortunately.
No, I don't think you'll be seeing Petey Wheatstraw at the Plainfield drive-in.
Well, long time ago, back when Abdul was at 96th Street, we had talked about him and I opening the Art House drive-in. We'd have four patrons, but they'd love seeing Bergman films in their car.
That's right. Hey, you haven't seen a chess match with death until you've seen it on the wide screen.
And the same junky food in the snack bar. So that's always good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But people are. I'm reading a few articles that say, you know, will this kill the movie theaters? Like, I don't think so. I think what it does is because you don't go to the movie. You go to the movies to watch a movie, but there's also the experience that goes along with it.
Right.
It's like, you know, people saying that when they put baseball on television, well, nobody will go to a baseball game anymore. Like, well, yeah, actually, yes, people will, because you're going for the experience that comes along, you know, with the sporting event, you know, watching the event live.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm hoping, and I know that, I guess, AMC is in some major financial trouble. But I think once when the theaters reopen, because, yeah, it can be a communal experience. And when a film and the audience are in sync together, you know, that it can be memorable. I'm hoping that we also folks learn to just be better members of the audience. Not of course at the art house that you and I would go to, but, you know, certain theaters, they just have some rude customers.
Yeah, exactly. It's the what you gonna do now?
Well, but, you know, hopefully, yeah, folks will be less likely to be on their phone and bring their children and, you know, talk as if it's their living room. It's not your living room. You're in a space with other people. But you'll still buy all the seats around your section, won't you?
Yes, we will.
Of course. Well, Abdul, I really appreciate you taking time out. You know, folks, you can go to indiepolitics.org to see what Hornbeck is up to. And, yes, when you find the list, Dr. Soci, film therapist, will go through it.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. We will walk through the pub. I actually think there may actually be one or two things in there that you may not have seen before.
Well, that happens. I just give off the aura that I've seen every film ever made.
Well, true, but you also talk like it too, so.
Moi?
Tell me a bedtime story.
All right, Abdul, stay healthy and sane.
Hey, you too, my friend. Take care.
There you go, Abdul Hakim Shabazz. You can go to indiepolitics.org for all of the shenanigans that he's doing. All right, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy. Grab a pencil. First, I will tell you what I've watched over the last week, and then we will get to what Facebook and Twitter, well, at least my corner of the Facebook and Twitter universe, have been watching over the past week. I forgot to mention this on last week's show, but it doesn't really matter because it's on Netflix, but it's a very cool documentary called ZZ Top, The Little Old Band from Texas. The guys obviously get to tell their story and their history. And for a documentary like this, if there's material that I don't know, then the film does its job. And that's what happens when you know things, apparently. But there was quite a few things about the band that I didn't know about. And they are very frank and honest. Hi, Frank Beard. As far as some of the stuff some of the hardships and some of the obstacles that they had in their early career, as well as when they had success. So anyway, it's very cool. Also, it came out on Warner Brothers, the archive collection. And it was also a good excuse just to show it to my family. My daughter had not seen it yet, but new on Warner Archives Blu-ray is the Ron Shelton film Tin Cup. And Emma enjoyed Bull Durham, which I watched with her earlier this year. I believe one of her cinematic crushes, if she had a time machine, is going back to late 80s Kevin Costner. And of course, it reteams Shelton with Costner, this time as a former golf pro down on his luck in a ramshackled driving range out in West Texas. And he falls for a psychologist played by Rene Russo, who, of course, is dating his longtime golfing rival played by Don Johnson. Cheech Marin is also in this, providing great comic relief as the sidekick. And I forgot how good this film is. It's a close second behind Bull Durham. But it follows all the screwball rules as far as the triangle, and also tackles the issue of, do you play it safe or do you go for it, whether it's in golf or in life. And it was a perfect Friday night film to watch with the family. Well, my family, at least. I don't know about yours, but still holds up very, very well. And another one that I didn't realize, and I believe someone else on Facebook had mentioned this documentary, so I wish I could give credit to whoever brought it up. But on Amazon Prime, there's a documentary called American Scary. It's from 2006, and it's about the history of the local horror show host. Now, first off, the only flaw with this film, there's no Sammy Terry, but it goes all the way back to obviously the early days of television when you had folks like Vampira and Zachary. And there's actually interviews with both of them, and also the talk about back in the 50s when the stations would buy movies and they had to fill the time with something, and sometimes the local kid show host or newscaster would also don some costume and become the local horror show host. Interviews include Tom Savini, Joel Hodgson, Joe Bob Briggs, Patricia Tallman, and it goes through the early stages back in the 50s and 60s. My guy Sir Graves Gastly from Detroit was brought up. Big Chuck and Little John out of Cleveland, Goulardi, a lot of them coming out of Ohio. I didn't realize that there was a hotbed of Ohio horror show hosts like Baron von Wolfstein and Dr. Creep. They talk about the Girls Club with Elvira and Stella, the Horror Host Underground, which you can see as far as current cable access and the internet. But yeah, it was just a lot of fun, and how Mystery Science Theater took this stuff to a new level. There's a fun segment with Neil Gaiman, who got to host Fox Movie Channel's 13 Nights of Fright, which I didn't get a chance to see. And I should probably find my interview with Neil Gaiman and replay that here on the show. But if you are a fan of local horror show hosts, and yes, they do bring up Jerry G. Bishop and Rich Coase, a.k.a. Svengoolie, and son of Svengoolie, who then just became Svengoolie. But it was just a lot of fun watching these clips and the folks behind these characters. So anyway, it's out there. It's on Amazon Prime, called American Scary. And of course, shout out and salute to Sammy Terry. I have an Ingmar Bergman box set, which I've been chipping away at. It's 30 Blu-rays. I'm on disc 19. So maybe by the end of the year. Who knows? But I chipped away at it. And I we're also, in my household, we've been watching, as far as series, BoJack Horseman and The Good Place. We just finished season one of Russian Doll. And I found the perfect film for fans of The Good Place, if you're missing that. It's the 1960 Ingmar Bergman comedy, The Devil's Eye. And it begins with a description of hell. What would hell be without marriage? And basically, Satan, see if you're a fan of The Good Place, see if this sounds familiar. You have Satan owns an office. He has two assistants that look like they're in an audition for Dangerous Liaisons. Flames, of course, are going on outside his window. And in this one, he recruits Don Juan to go back to Earth and deflower a virgin who is engaged. And she also happens to be the daughter of a vicar. So Don Juan and his minion go back to Earth, and this is the job. Sounds kind of familiar. And it's Ingmar Bergman, and it's about 90 minutes or so. And if you're intimidated by Bergman, and I understand that, Playing Chess with Death, which Abdul mentioned earlier, or something like Persona, this is a really good gateway to the films of Ingmar Bergman, just like Smiles on a Summer Night. Anybody who's involved in musical theater, if you're a fan of Little Night Music, you should see Bergman's Smiles on a Summer Night. I'm also a big fan, of course, of Scenes from a Marriage, which I'm hoping my daughter will be able to watch. But it's got the right tone as far as dark comedy, and Bergman didn't do that many comedies, so it's worth checking out. You also have Bergman regular B.B. Anderson, who is stunning even when she's painting a room, as we are introduced to that character. So that's worth checking out. Another one of his comedies, this is the film he did before Persona from 1964 called All These Women. And disclaimer at the beginning claiming that this is all based on a misunderstanding. This was also his first color film. B.B. Anderson is also in this, as well as Harriet Anderson. And it's apparently an homage, a spoof, a dig on the films of Fellini, in which we have a famous conductor, a famous maestro at his palatial estate, and an over-the-top music critic who is brought in to write the maestro's biography. And he meets who appears to be his wife and his mistresses, but nobody can quite confirm who is married and who is the mistress. You have, of course, the obligatory droll butler, and a big burst of physical comedy throughout the film. And this is another short one. And it's interesting to see the man who did Persona and Seventh Seal to go to this broad range of comedy. I don't think he ever did this again after All These Women. It's not bad, but it's also a fascinating oddity in the Ingmar Bergman collection. So that's 1964, All These Women. Of course, April 20th happened. A good excuse to revisit the documentary Grass, which is about the history of the war of America's war on pot, narrated by Woody Harrelson, of course, and all of the things that they said over the years that marijuana does. It makes you kill. It makes you go insane. It's a gateway to stronger, harder drugs. It undermines the man. And it also shows the government's attempts to rein in on marijuana, and look where it's gone. As soon as that was over, I revisited, of course, Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke. Let's not forget that this was the first film for both of them, and it shows. I mean, it's basically a comedy album with a bit of a plot, sort of. They're being pursued by Stacy Keach as Sergeant Stadenko. The last third is devoted to a punk rock contest. There's been worse representations of punk rock, so there's that. But you also have, coming in for one scene each, Strother Martin playing Chong's dad, or man's dad, and Tom Skerritt as a cousin of Cheech Marin's character, of Pedro. Yeah, it's kind of lowbrow, and it's billed as a rock comedy, and that's kind of what it is. You also have a van that's made out of marijuana, so it works for 420, sure. And it's believe it or not, the best of the Cheech and Chong films, and that's saying quite a bit. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Also showed the family, well, Emma had not seen it. Lynn had, but it had been a long, long time. Hannah and her sisters. I knew Emma would like seeing recognize some of the younger faces like Sam Waterston and, younger than today, Woody Allen. And Max von Sydow. We got a little bit of Max von Sydow for her to watch. But she did gravitate toward Diane Weiss' character. And younger Michael Caine. So, but yeah, Academy Awards for Diane Weiss, Michael Caine, and for Woody Allen for the screenplay. It was good to revisit. And then I follow that up. I don't have TCM, so I'm going to bring that up. So there's a certain mystique about watching an old black and white movie at night. It's kind of like listening to jazz or blues on the radio at night in a big city. But 1947's The Lady from Shanghai, directed and starring Orson Welles with a blonde Rita Hayworth. Welles plays an Irish rogue who falls for a blonde temptress with a husband who's walking with two canes and, a triangle begins, as well as a convoluted murder plot shot in Mexico. It was fun to watch my smarter two-thirds just kind of smirk at the male-driven dialogue. And I think for my daughter, who's 18, and this happened also with The Quiet Man, she notices a bigger shift when it comes to studio footage right next to actual footage or location shoots. It really jars her. I've been at it a while, so I'm used to it. But there's also some great camera work because it's Orson Welles. So there's a few dubbing issues, but the sequences in Chinatown and the Funhouse and the Hall of Mirrors, we owe a bit of, I believe, Enter the Dragon owes a bit of debt to that film. But it was cool checking out The Lady from Shanghai. Going back to my Bergman box set, 1953 Sawdust and Tinsel, about a circus that's traveling through town. The head of the circus is on bad financial has some bad financial issues, as well as returning to the town where his wife and son live. And meanwhile, his mistress is falling for one of the local actors who's brought in. So there's the thing about circus performers versus theater performers and how they're looked at in the theater world as well as how they're looked at in town. And we have a circus climax that turns dark with a duel. Yes. But so it's this another kind of parade image that he would later do in The Seventh Seal. Also on this disc was the 1969 made-for-television film The Right, basically, for the most part, a three-person show a four-person show, where two men and a woman are interviewed by a man of power. And their past offenses are brought up. In this particular case, they're accused of making a racy film, and it's basically what happens when you're interviewed as a group and then what happens when you're interviewed individually and how much trust you have with the other people that that are on the same side of the desk as you are. And builds to a bit of an odd climax that looks a little bit like something from An Eyes Wide Shut Party, but not that graphic. It's another fascinating little oddity in his box set. I had not seen it before. So anyway, those are the films I've watched over the week. Let's get to what you've watched. Going on Twitter, let's see. Jason writes, Once Upon a Time in the West, excellent. The Deaths of Stalin, also excellent. And Kung Pao Enter the Fist, which I need to revisit. Mary writes, Whale Rider, such an excellent film with great performances. I agree, Mary. I need to check back on that one as well. Rachel writes, The First Spy Kids. Bob writes, The Current War and Once Were Brothers, the documentary about Robbie Robertson and the band. Jordan writes, Marriage Story and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And Patricia writes, Contagion. There's always one in every group. So that was from last week's Facebook post that I didn't get to. So sorry about that. It's in the timing. So now we'll get to what I posted on Facebook yesterday. Grab a pencil, folks. If you haven't already, here we go. Kim writes, Kyanakwatsi, great experimental meditation, haunting score by Philip Glass. I agree. I remember seeing it when it first came out on video. I was probably in early high school, and I didn't get it. I just, my brain couldn't fathom it. I was able to watch it again about a decade later and got a better grip on it. So that was cool. Richard Probst, The True History of the Kelly Gang, and IFC Films did release going digital and VOD. So there you go. Mike writes, with all this extra time, I'm thinking about making the kids watch a longer than normal movie. I'm thinking Lawrence of Arabia or The Longest Cut of Dune I Can Find. What say you? Great idea or modern attention span torture? It's both, but you should still do it, Mike. Jed Bryan, who's been on the show, watched The New Invisible Man and the short film Outbreak that just came out. My wife, son, and myself had the pleasure in acting, and he has a link below. So, yeah, look for Outbreak on YouTube. Allison writes, I finally got around to Avengers Endgame. Not sure what all the fuss was about. I think the writing was pretty strained at times. Well, I think it's hard to have conversations, a two-person conversation, when there's a giant epic battle going on, but that's just me. Mike writes, I watched The Wizard of Oz the other day for the 100th time. It just never gets old. Thank you, Mike. Jared writes, The Money Pit, Tootsie, and Miracle. Anytime I think of Miracle, big shout out to my friends Jen and Anna, and they know why. Monica writes, I introduced Brian to Magic Mike. Oh, my. Of course you did, Monica. I'll talk to you soon. Oh, and happy birthday. Brian writes, Meros Peros and Babel, both featuring his triple story style. I had seen it in the first run, but not since. Interesting to revisit back to back. Ron writes, The Ten Commandments and Rob Roy, two of my favorites. That's the film, not the drink. Eric writes, The Stanford Prison Experiment. David writes, Back in Time, a documentary about Back to the Future. I will also be watching Motherless Brooklyn soon. Abby writes, The Wicker Man and Train to Busan. And that's the original one with Christopher Lee. It was so good. David writes, Carry On Doctor. Ah, Simon Majumdar's one of his favorite series. Stephen writes, The Haunting and The Uninvited. Like, we need more creepiness in our lives of late. But those are both really good films, Stephen. Chris writes, Farewell, My Lovely with Robert Mitchum. Free on Prime. Kane writes, Mazes and Monsters, a Tom Hanks movie I had never seen, a thriller, but more of a guide to mental health and D&D content. I do remember seeing that on television, Kane. Good check there. Mark writes, Outbreak. What an incredibly lazy, foolish, hyperbolic piece of junk. Ouch. Cheryl writes, Parasite, Good Boys, and Blinded by the Light. Joe Shearer, who's been on this show as a guest and as a guest host, I checked out Arkansas, a thriller from Clark Duke of Hot Tub Time Machine, starring him, Liam Hemsworth, and Vince Vaughn. It was a solid flick. Also, Never Surrender, a documentary about the making of Galaxy Quest. Also a good one. Brian writes, Knives Out, The Color of Space, and Underwater. That came out earlier in January with Kristen Stewart. Hi there, Stacy. Maya writes, yesterday, Tangled, Frozen, Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, Can You Tell We Have Kids, and Black Panther. Yes, I can tell. Tammy writes, Blinded by the Light and Motherless Brooklyn. Tammy also writes, Ed Norton needs to wife me up. Go for it, Tammy. Joan writes, The Skeleton Twins with Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig. It's on Hulu, she says, and really enjoyed it. I did as well. Joellen writes, Dial M for Murder and Now Voyager. Teresa writes, Argo is on right now. Well, this was yesterday. Thomas writes, Catherine and I watched Groundhog Day. And, of course, I responded with, Andy McDowell can slap me 20 days in a row if she wants. And I know Mrs. Sosie is laughing right now. Jonathan writes, The original Get Carter. It had a very gritty appeal, plus being a British film, all the actors resemble real people. Beverly writes, Escape from New York. Nancy writes, Honey Boy, El Camino, and A River Runs Through It. Diana writes, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, or as I like to call it, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Captain Fantastic, Code 8, The Search for One-Eyed Jimmy, Young Adult, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Fractured, and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. There's two. All right. Andy writes, Spencer Confidential, I Came for Eliza Schlesinger and Stayed for Winston Duke. Ending posts, that there's going to be a sequel. Jeff writes, Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters. My kids loved it, which means so dumb. Ow. Lou Harry said the Clapper streaming productions of Tiger Country and Drawing the Line. And, of course, if you go to the MidwestFilmJournal.com, his review of True History of the Kelly Gang. Joni writes, Joni Michaels, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Once Upon a Time in the West, and The Dirty Dozen. Good stuff there, Joni. Matthew writes, I was on a Duke roll for a bit this week, last week, El Dorado, Rio Lobo, and The Sons of Katie Elder. Mark writes, The Wind, Stan and Ollie, Zombieland Double Tap, In the Valley of Violence, that's the John Travolta Western, What's Not to Like, he says. Denise writes, Swiss Army Man, good call. Megan writes, Roman Holiday and The Mask of Zorro. Joe writes, Gary Cooper's Sergeant York, my father's favorite actor and film, a classic. George writes, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. I need to revisit that one. I didn't latch on to it when I first saw it when it came out. Jamie writes, Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame, introducing it to my 7-year-old, hoping certain scenes don't scar him. Fingers crossed. Mike writes, The Irishman. We have the time. Andrew writes, Dukes of Hazzard, The Beginning. Is it Dukes of Hazzard, comma, The Beginning? Anyway, you get the idea. Abby writes, Apollo 13 and Iron Man. Also browsing through some TV favorites, of course. Christian writes, Ekladki Kodetka to Isilaga. Hope I'm saying that correctly. Cindy writes, Pride, a gem of a movie. Duke writes, both Sicario films. First one edged out the second. Think there'll be a third? Big time setup for it. Well, I don't know. Zachariah writes, not Zachary, Some Like It Hot, The Tenant, and The St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Andrew writes, The Changeling, that's the one with George C. Scott, Under Silver Lake with Andrew Garfield, and Broken Embraces by Pedro Almodovar, all recommended but very different. Indeed. John writes, A Most Wanted Man. JJ writes, Neon Demon, super weird. Not sure it was good, but was something to experience. And also Hot Fuzz for the 100th time. Still a perfect movie. Michael writes, History of the World Part 1. Scott writes, it was Matrix week for us. Still enjoy them for the dozen or so times. Mark writes, The Long Goodbye. Doug writes, Harold and Maude, Rear Window, Dinner at 8, The 1954 version of A Star is Born, Metropolis, The Good Earth, The Seventh Seal, A Hard Day's Night, North by Northwest, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Mad Love, two Vitaphone shorts, Baby Reese Marie and The Child Wonder and Lamb Chops, Safety Last, They Live by Night, Network, Casablanca, The Magnificent Ambersons, Night in the City, I'm assuming the original with Richard Widmark, The Passion of Joan of Arc, The Setup, Redheaded Woman, and The Hustler. Good list there, Doug. Britt says, I found out on Prime that has lots of Asterix and Tintin cartoons. I'm in heaven. Also, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, GoldenEye, Return of the Jedi, Jungle Book, the animated one, The Rainman Twins, Thin, Asterix the Gaul, Tintin and the Prisoners of the Sun, Asterix and Cleopatra, and The Willow Boys. Ed writes, this may be the week I finally watch Birdman. I have a few friends that are appalled that I haven't seen this yet. It happens, Ed. It happens with all of us. And then we also overreact when somebody hasn't watched something. I know I'm guilty of that. Frank writes, Parasite, incredibly well done, perfectly written, cast, directed, shot, and edited, highly deserving of all the awards it won. Megan writes, I watched High School Musical for the 17th time. And last night we watched Swiss Family Robinson. Ellie was sure that it would be scary. I was sure it would be boring. But Doug had such fond memories of it from his youth. We endured. We loved it. And we decided that we want to be shipwrecked on a glorious beach with a cool tree mansion. Also, a whole bunch of new movies and shows are coming to Netflix in May. I'll post the link to the list in a comment. Excited for the second season of Dead to Me. Very good, Megan. Jeff writes, Game Night, Dan in Real Life, and The Shootist. Taylor writes, rewatched the entire Die Hard series, working on the complete Terminator film series now. Different Taylor also writes, Curtiz. That's the documentary about filmmaker Michael Curtiz. I believe it's on Netflix, and I need to look for that as well. Jeff writes, I introduced my boys to Tootsie. Great job, Jeff. I hope they enjoyed it. I know my Emma enjoyed it. Janet writes, it's a mad, 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 mad world. Silkwood, War Games, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Octopussy, The Natural, Muppets Take Manhattan, The Muppet Movie, and Ghostbusters, the original one. Thomas writes, Map to the Stars, The Death of Stalin, and Once Upon a Time in the West. Ah, another Once Upon a Time in the West. Very good. Julia writes, His Kind of Women, Bonjour Trieste, 1958, The Magnificent Ambersons, Double Harness, and She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, another Ambersons one. Jay writes, Watch the Friday Trilogy, laughed our butts off, also rewatching The Mandalorian. Dennis writes, Cool Hand Luke. Leslie writes, We watched Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. Mark writes, finally managed to catch John Wick 3, and I'm introducing a friend to Ronin tonight. And Brian chimed in, oh, Lord, I've watched all three at least three times each. That's nine times. Connor writes, Logan Lucky, the NASCAR version of Ocean's 11, also directed by Steven Soderbergh. Lucinda writes, The Danish Girl, Her, and Knives Out. Robin writes, keeping it light this week, she's being sarcastic, The Road to Perdition and House of Sand and Fog. Whew, hopefully Robin didn't watch those back-to-back. Wow. Molly writes, 7-Up and Me, Pokemon Detective Pikachu, Jenny Slate, Stage Fright, An American Tale, 5-0 Goes West, and Ready or Not. John writes, Jojo Rabbit. Rachel writes, Tomb Raider and The Raven. Jeff writes, Stuber, Like a Boss, and The Jungle Book 2. Chloe writes, Palo Alto, The Rise of Skywalker, the 1997 film version of Emma, and I watched the 2018 adaptation of Shirley Jackson's We Have Always Lived in the Castle because I just finished reading the book, and it was bad. Sorry, Chloe. Kathy writes, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. We had fun naming the stars in the vintage clips. Of course. And also a great joke about the state of Indiana. Well, a city in Indiana. If you haven't watched it yet, you have to check that out. Timothy writes, 1917. Jeffrey writes, The Dark Crystal. Jay writes, I watched and actually liked the Netflix Spencer movie starring Mark Wahlberg. Congratulations, Jeff. It's no, you know, big dollhouse, but you take what you can get. Jay knows what I'm talking about. Adam writes, Bad Boys for Life and The Gentlemen. Darren writes, The Birds, Blazing Saddles, After Earth, Billy Elliot, Jacques Brel is Alive and Well and Living in Paris, Call of the Wild, and The Lost Continent. Ed writes, Wes Anderson kick this week, Moonrise Kingdom, Grand Budapest Hotel, and Darjeeling Limited. Megan chimes in again. Not that Megan, this Megan. Also, we watched the new Disney movie Onward, and while I have a pretty high tolerance for Disney's love of killing off parents, this went beyond the pale. It's a movie about child torture. I hated it. Ellie loves it. You are love. Matthew writes, watched all the Mad Max films. Seems appropriate. I also watched Space Jam. Seems appropriate. Quentin writes, Netflix Ozark, Money Heist, and Sunderland Till I Die. Thanks, Onion. That's between her and me. Eric writes, Parasite. And it's on. He said it's a chore, but worth it. Not too overrated. Okay. Maureen writes, Wait Until Spring, Bandini, Free on YouTube with Joe Mantegna, Faye Dunaway, and Ornetta Muti. Hope I'm saying that right. David writes, Iron Man, Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, and The First Avenger. Jeff writes, The Platform on Netflix, and the newer Watership Down, also on Netflix. Missy writes, Clueless? I knew you were going to get around to that, Missy. I'm glad you did. Daniel writes, Good Boys, The Lighthouse, Parasite, The Peanut Butter Falcon, Lady and the Tramp, Other Loves, The Shaggy Dog, The Corpse Came COD, and the Amazing Mr. Williams, and Funny Lady. Alan writes, Girl Most Likely, and Don't Judge, The Nun. I think that was in the last week. Okay, Alan. Susan writes, on a musical theme, Yesterday and Blinded by the Light. Joe writes, mostly a bunch of action stuff this week, but currently Thelma and Louise. Tom writes, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I enjoyed, but was really surprised with the ending. Hobbs and Shaw, mindless action. The girl was supposed to die in 12 hours from a virus at one point, and they have to fly to Samoa to fix a machine, fight a ton of bad guys, and save her. We Googled the flight time. It was 15 to 18 hours. Well, yeah, you never let continuity get away of an action film. Kaylin writes, Sing and Chicken Little, mostly doing TV shows this week. Nothing wrong with that. Gary writes, Apocalypse Now, Marvel's The Adventures, and The Adventures of Rat Fink and Boo Boo, with or without Mystery Science Theater riffs. Because, Gary, you're strong if you're watching that film as is. Mary writes, Midsummer, Gaia's Ghost, and Videodrome. Tommy writes, oh, Tommy, this is Tommy Owen. I want to shamelessly plug him. He has in the latest episode of CSI New Orleans, he's there. I got to share the stage with him in Muncie Civic's production of Death of a Salesman way back in 1989. But Tommy, it's good to see you on TV, Tommy. Tommy writes, Once Upon a Time in the West, Hold the Dark, and Hostels. Robert writes, Laura, starring Gene Tierney, Dana Andrews, and Vincent Price. That's another one I need to show Emma. Diana writes, Yesterday, loved it. Some like it hot. Loved it as much today as I did the first time I watched it as a kid. Rapture Palooza. Claire writes, Frozen 2 and literally all the K-dramas I can get my hands on. That's right, because Claire loved, came from her love of Parasite. Very good. Pete writes, Support Your Local Sheriff with James Garner. Timeless humor, he says. This is Spinal Tap and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Jackie writes, The Bookshop. Alex writes, On a dare, I started watching a Serbian film. Uh-oh. Had to watch Better Off Dead and Head Over Heels to cleanse the palate. I understand that, Alex. Maria writes, The 2005 musical version of The Producers. We're on a Mel Brooks kick right now. Yes, I remember, Maria, taking Emma to see that film. Lynn and I took her, as well as my in-laws, to see that film when we were in Palm Springs. For the record, Maria has directed Emma twice in Fun Home and King and I. Emma was about 4, and it was one of the first non-animated film we took her to, around the same time March of the Penguins. But, yeah, she enjoyed Ula and her dresses and dancing. So, but yeah, she did enjoy that, and we still do. Keith writes, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance and The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Kelly writes, Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, A Shot in the Dark, Aladdin, Viva Las Vegas, and the 60s, the original version of That Darn Cat. Aggie writes, In the Heat of the Night and Night Crossing. Steven writes, Last night we watched Clouzot's Les Corbeaux, hope I'm saying that right, pardon my French. And finally, because he emails it to me because he's at work, Eric writes, First time viewing Their Finest from 2017, which is, I enjoyed that as well, and The Kennel Murder Case from 1933 with William Powell. Rewatches Barabbas, the biblical epic from 1961, Clear and Present Danger, and People Will Talk from 1951. So there you go, folks. I hope you found something in there that you could check out. So as I've mentioned, whenever possible, obviously we want to watch films to ease us and give us some comfort, you know, kind of cinematic comfort food. But also take a chance on a film that you have not seen yet. So hopefully of the hundreds of titles I've given you, you'll find something to watch in the next week. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And stay healthy, stay safe, and stay sane. And we'll go again next week. So thank you for listening. We're going to end today's show with a little bit of, movie music done by the great piano player Errol Garner. Yes, no, I'm not playing Misty. for you fans of Jessica Walter and Clint Eastwood. No, the Octave Remastered series put out by also Mac Avenue Music Group, they've reissued a number of Errol Garner's albums, including the one you're going to hear. It's called Now Playing, A Night at the Movies. So it has songs like It's Only a Paper Moon, Stella by Starlight, I'll Get By, 3 O'Clock in the Morning, Million Dollar Baby, It's Only a Paper Moon, How Deep is the Ocean, You Made Me Love You, which they use, well, not this version, but that song is in Hannah and Her Sisters, and I always think of that, when I hear that song, I think of that film, as well as Xanadu, that's for you, Alicia. But, but anyway, we're gonna end the show with Errol Garner doing As Time Goes By for you fans of Casablanca out there. And we'll do another show next week. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!